Hello and welcome to this week's Revisiting Old Favourites podcast. We are continuing our pilgrimage to Rome with Hilaire Belloc on the path to Rome. If you're a recent member of the Inner Sanctum, please feel free to go back to the first. We've been on this pilgrimage for a very long while. Indeed, it may well be a year or so by the time we finish. We're now in Italy, the final stretch, if you like, of the pilgrimage, and today the main action is our intrepid pilgrim Hilaire Belloc and his attempt to cross the River Taro and thoughts of Saint Christopher that he associates with it. So without further ado, let's continue on the path to Rome with Hilaire Belloc. Next morning it was as I had thought. Going out before it was fully light, a dense mist all around and a clear sky showed what the day was to be. As I reached Medesano, the sun rose, and in half an hour the air was instinct with heat. Within an hour it was blinding. An early mass in the church below the village prepared my day. But as I took coffee afterwards in a little inn and asked about crossing the Taro to Fornovo, my first point, to my astonishment they shook their heads. The Taro was impassable. Why could it not be crossed? My very broken language made it difficult for me to understand. They talked of rami, which I thought meant oars, but rami, had I known it, meant the separate branches or streams whereby these torrential rivers of Italy flow through their arid beds. I drew a boat and asked if one could not cross in that, for I was a northerner and my idea of a river was a river with banks and water in between. But they laughed and said no. Then I made the motion of swimming. They said it was impossible, and one man hung his head to indicate drowning. It was serious. They said tomorrow, or rather the next day, one might do it. Finally, a boy that stood by said he remembered a man who knew the river better than anyone else, and he, if anyone could, would get me across. So I took the boy with me up the road, and as we went, I saw, parallel to the road, a wide plain of dazzling rocks and sand, and beyond it, shining and silhouetted like an Arab village, the group of houses that was Fornovo. This plain was their sort of river in these hills. The boy said that sometimes it was full and a mile wide. Sometimes it dwindled into dirty pools. Now, as I looked, a few thin streams seemed to wind through it, and I could not understand the danger. After a mile or two, we came to a spot in the road where a patch of brushwood only separated us from the riverbed. Here the boy bade me wait, and asked a group of peasants whether the guide was in. They said they thought so, and some went up into the hillside with the boy to fetch him. Others remained with me, looking at the riverbed and up Fornovo beyond, shaking their heads and saying it had not been done for days. But I did not understand whether the rain freshet had passed and was draining away, or whether it had not yet come down from beyond, and I waited for the guide. They brought him at last down from his hut among the hills. He came with great strides, a kindly-looking man, extremely tall and thin, and with very pale eyes. He smiled. They pointed me out to him, and we struck the bargain by holding up three fingers each for 3 lire and nodding. Then he grasped his long staff, and I mine. We bade farewell to the party, and together we went in silence through the thick brushwood down towards the broad riverbed. The stones of it glared like the sands of Africa. Fornovo baked under the sun, all white and black. Between us was this broad plain of parched shingle and rocks that could, in a night, become one enormous river or dwindle to a chain of stagnant ponds. Today, some seven narrow streams wandered in the expanse, and again they seemed so easy to cross that again I wondered at the need of a guide. We came to the edge of the first, and I climbed on the guide's back. He went bare-legged into the stream, deeper and deeper, till my feet, though held up high, just touched the water. Then, laboriously, he climbed the further shore, and I got down upon dry land. It had been but 20 yards or so, and he knew the place well. I had seen, as we crossed, what a torrent this first little stream was, and I now knew the difficulty and understood the warnings of the inn. The second branch was impassable. We followed it up for nearly a mile to where an island, that is, a mass of high land that must have been an island in flood time and that had on it an old brown village, stood above the white bed of the river. Just at this island, my guide found a ford. And the way he found it is worth telling. He taught me the trick, and it is most useful to men who wander alone in mountains. You take a heavy stone, how heavy you must learn to judge, for a more rapid current needs a heavier stone, but say about 10 pounds. This you lob gently into midstream. How? It is impossible to describe, but when you do it, it is quite easy to see that in about 4 feet of water or less, the stone splashes quite differently from the way it does in 5 feet or more. This is a sure test, and one much easier to acquire by practice than to write about. To teach myself this trick, I practiced it throughout my journey in these wilds. Having found a ford then, he again took me on his shoulders, but in midstream, the water being up to his breast, his foot slipped on a stone. All the bed beneath was rolling and churning in the torrent. And in a moment we had both fallen. He pulled me up straight by his side, and then indeed, overwhelmed in the rush of water, it was easy to understand how the taro could drown men, and why the peasants dreaded these little ribbons of water. The current rushed and foamed past me, coming nearly to my neck, and it was icy cold. One had to lean against it, and the water so took away one's weight that any moment one might have slipped and been carried away. The guide, a much taller man, indeed he was 6'3" or so, supported me, holding my arm, and again in a moment we reached dry land. After that adventure, there was no need for carrying. The third, fourth, fifth, and sixth branches were easily fordable. Seventh was broad and deep, and I found it a heavy matter, nor should I have waded it but for my guide, for the water bore against me like a man wrestling, and it was as cold as Acheron, the river of the dead. Then, on the further shore, and warning him, in lingua franca, of his peril, I gave him his wage, and he smiled and thanked me, and went back, choosing his plans at leisure. Thus did I cross the River Taro, a danger for men. Where I landed was a poor man sunning himself. He rose and walked with me to Fornovo. He knew the guide. "He is a good man," he said to me of this friend. "He is as good as a little piece of bread." "E vero," I answered, "e San Cristofero." This pleased the peasant, and indeed it was true, for the guide's business was exactly that of St. Christopher, except that the saint took no money, and lived, I suppose, on air. And so to Fornovo, and the heat blinded and confused, and the air was alive with flies. But the sun dried me at once, and I pressed up the road, because I needed food. after I had eaten in this old town, I was preparing to make for Salestano and to cross the first high spur of the Apennines that separated me from it, when I saw, as I left the place, a very old church. And I stayed a moment and looked at carvings which were in no order, but put in pell-mell, evidently chosen from some other building. They were barbaric, but one could see that they stood for the last judgment of man. And there were the good-looking foolish, and there were the wicked being boiled by devils in a pot. And what was most pleasing was one devil, who with great joy was carrying off a rich man's gold in a bag. But now we are too wise to believe in such follies, and when we die we take our wealth with us. In the 9th century they had no way of doing this, for no system of credit yet obtained. Then, leaving the main road, which runs to Potremoli and at last to Spezia, my lane climbed up into the hills and ceased, little by little, to be even a lane. It became, from time to time, the bed of a stream, then nothing, then a lane again, and at last, at the head of the glen, I confessed to having lost it. But I noted a great rock or peak above me for a landmark, and I said to myself, no matter, the wall of this glen before me is obviously the ridge of the spur. The rock must be left to the north, and I have but to cross the ridge by its guidance. By this time, however, the heat overcame me, and, as it was already afternoon, and as I had used so much of the preceding night for my journey, I remembered the wise custom of hot countries and lay down to sleep. Thanks so much for joining me once again in this latest thrilling instalment of The Path to Rome by Hilaire Belloc. Please do join me again next week as we continue on this pilgrimage to the Eternal City with Old Thunder himself, the great and indomitable Hilaire Belloc. Till then, thanks for joining me, and goodbye and God bless.